Welcome back to Warehousing Unboxed, an IWLA podcast, where we explore the dynamic and ever-changing world of 3PL warehousing. Guess what? It's already season two! Woohoo! Thank you for tuning back in as we unbox topics that are affecting your warehouse business. We are thrilled to kick off this season with an industry hot topic, bonded warehouses, foreign trade zones, and other value-added services that are transforming the way goods move across borders. This episode uncovers how these strategic resources enhance warehouses' roles in the supply chain, reduce costs, and streamline operations in an increasingly complex global market. Whether you're 10 years in or just exploring these options for your business, this episode is packed with valuable insights. Let's start by taking a closer look at bonded warehouses and foreign trade zones, two critical components in the toolkit of global trade. Bonded warehouses. These specialized storage facilities offer a significant advantage for importers. When goods are stored in a bonded warehouse, businesses can defer the payment of customs duties and taxes until the goods are sold or removed from the warehouse. This not only improves cash flow, but also allows businesses to better manage their inventory and reduce upfront costs. Imagine importing high valuable goods and not having to pay duties immediately. That's a game changer for financial planning. Bonded warehouses also often provide additional services like inventory management, which can further streamline logistics processes. Foreign trade zones, or FTZs. FTZs take the benefits of bonded warehouses a step further. Located within the United States, but considered outside U.S. customs territory, these zones offer incredible flexibility for handling and storing goods. Within an FTZ, businesses can defer, reduce, or even eliminate customs duties on imported goods. Beyond the financial advantages, both bonded warehouses and FTZs offer strategic benefits in terms of supply chain management. They enable businesses to be more responsive to market demands, optimize inventory levels, and enhance overall operational agility. But to really understand why these options are so valuable, we need to go to the source. Today, IWLA Membership Director Jennifer Resney sat down with three IWLA members who share their knowledge and firsthand experiences with both of these elements and more. Please enjoy Tom Cook, CEO and Managing Director of Blue Tiger International, Nick Gibbons, General Manager and Principal with Myborg 3PL, and Uma Taylor, Business Development Manager with Myborg 3PL.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of Season 2 of IWLA Warehousing Unboxed. We are going to be discussing bonded warehouse, foreign trade zone, and other warehouse value added for global trade. I bring to us Tom Cook from Blue Tiger and Nick Gibbons and Uma from Myborg. I welcome Myborg. They are actually a brand new IWLA warehouse member, so thank you. Tom and his company, Blue Tiger, has been with us since 2021 and has spoke at other events and been a great resource and advocate for IWLA. So just to get started, Tom, if you want to, again, introduce yourself and give a little background on yourself and Blue Tiger.
Sure. Thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate the opportunity to be available for this podcast, and we look forward to a continued growing and mutually beneficial relationship with your organization. So Blue Tiger International is a 30-year-old supply chain management consulting business. And basically, we help companies navigate the challenges of global trade. I myself owned a 3PL warehousing freight forwarding operation for about 20 years that I fortunately was able to sell back in 2000 and have now moved in more of the direction of providing advice and counsel to companies involved in global trade. About half of our business is specifically associated with principal importers and exporters. The other 50% is involved with service providers, warehousemen, trucking companies, and companies that provide various services to the principal companies that import and export. And one of the things that we look for, particularly in the business development sector, is how can we create a scenario for warehouses and companies that provide that service to differentiate themselves and add value, and at the end of the day, add an additional revenue stream into their organization. And so that's where we come into the subject of foreign trade zones bonded warehouse. And I'm going to also add container freight stations into the mix of when we have that discussion today. So what we try to do is be an asset to the members of your organization to be able to provide additional guidance on how they can make themselves have a differentiation, add value, and at the end of the day, add additional revenue into their organization.
Oh, that's fantastic. So yeah, and now Nick and Uma, if you'd like to introduce yourselves and give just a little background on MyBorg.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having us. Super excited to be here and join in with Tom and Uma. So MyBorg has been around since 1981. The owner, Zach MyBorg's father, started the company. Zach went to college, graduated, came out, and was a truck driver. His father got ready to retire, and Zach said, I'll buy these 10 trucks, and I'll take the company over. And he had a vision of, if I can just build this up to 100 trucks, that'd be pretty cool. Fast forward to 2024, we have 250 trucks running over-the-road freight across the country. We have 1.2 million square feet of warehousing 3PL space in Rockford, Illinois. And we have 700,000 square feet here in Houston, Texas, where Uma and I work.
And yeah, so Nick is the general manager of this facility, and I'm the business development manager. He oversees the operations, the day-to-day business. So he has a group of, and a small team that who's under him. And so far, we've been doing pretty well.
Yeah,
we've been surprisingly booming, and I think we're really interested for our next phase.
Oh, that's excellent. So I thought we'd just get started with the basics. What's, if one of you want to jump in, educate our listeners to what is foreign trade zone? What is bonded warehouse? And I know, Tom, you added container freight stations, because I'll get questions from, I'll have people call and send me an email to IWLA or, hey, I'm looking at FTZ.
I'll jump in and give an overview of it. U.S. Customs has a direct line of responsibility into Congress, and the people who lobby directly with Congress on behalf of customs issues, going back more than 60, 70 years ago, has put a significant amount of pressure on Congress to put pressure on customs to not only be an enforcement agency in terms of goods coming across the border, but also to provide programs and value adds so that the international trade community can get favorable treatment in the movement of their goods to and from the United States. So because of that pressure, a number of programs have been developed, three of them very specifically, foreign trade zones, bonded warehouses, and container freight stations. And these are programs that are available to companies that import and export that actually provide significant value. And really the value that they provide to these principal companies is that they lower the landed costs, okay? Meaning their cost of moving the goods from point A to point B is really the impact. So a lot of companies can do this independently, but most of us who are in this business know that there are a significant amount of companies that really want to outsource this responsibility to a third party, which would be a warehouse, a trucking company, a freight forwarder, companies in that venue. So the first opportunity is a container freight station. And this is typically run by warehousemen and particularly freight forwarders and trucking drayage companies, in which they can create a situation where when goods come into the United States, either let's just say a container comes from overseas or an air freight transaction comes into an airport, where the goods don't get customs cleared and they move into a container freight station, which is a designated customs area inside a warehouse. And the goods come in there, and it allows the company to break down those shipments, okay, then disperse them to wherever they're going to go, either an export or an import, picked up by a trucker, given to Federal Express, UPS, whatever may happen. And it allows that to be done in 14 days without having to do a customs clearance until it leaves that container freight station. And this is very big, particularly in what I call the gateways around the country. Obviously, wherever we have ocean ports, and wherever we have major airports that handle international air freight, or where the river system comes in that brings in international shipping, is where typically container freight stations operate. But it's a service that a warehouseman or a 3PL or freight forwarder can provide to their importers so that they can break down these shipments Okay, and then disperse them to wherever they're going to go and not have to worry about a customs clearance process until they exit that facility. The second opportunity is what we refer to as bonded warehousing. Bonded warehouses is warehouses that sit outside the U.S. economy so that when somebody imports something from overseas, they just have to declare to customs that it's going into a bonded facility, but they do not have to do a customs clearance, and therefore there's no obligation to pay duties or taxes. The purpose and primary benefit of a bonded facility is allow goods to move into the United States without the obligation to do customs clearance and the obligation to pay duties or taxes at that point in time. It's only at some point down the road when it exits that facility, in fact, that duty and taxes have to be paid and the customs clearance occurs. But if you had a distribution facility in the United States set up as a bonded warehouse and you bring in goods from overseas, and now you have 90, 120, 180 days that you're keeping in there, you're getting the cash flow advantage, okay, of not having to pay those duties until it becomes a value to you when it leaves the facility and you sell it. So appreciate the fact that interest rates 3 years ago were down in the 2% category. So cash flow advantage wasn't that big, but today they're in the 10 to 12% category. So cash flow has a huge impact for companies today. So bonded warehouses have a much greater relevance because of the cost of money today. The second option with bonded warehousing is that it also says that if you export from that facility anything that you imported, there would be no obligation to have to pay any duties or taxes because the goods would never enter the United States. Okay? And a lot of companies in the United States do North American distribution, meaning they import from overseas, they bring the goods into the United States, and now in that bonded facility, they can sort things out, bring things into the United States, and also export from that facility and gain all these advantages. In a bonded warehouse, though, we can only keep international freight. Okay, we can't commingle domestic freight and international freight. And we have a 5-year window in order to move the freight out. So once it comes in, the clock starts ticking. We have 5 years to make a decision whether it's going to be an import or an export or some other thing such as being destroyed as another option. So for warehouses, third-party facilitators, this becomes another value add. And you can take a section of your warehouse. You don't have to take the whole facility, or you can take a container yard, whatever space you define to make that the bonded part of the location. The last program, which really provides the greatest value as compared to the container freight station, the bonded, is the foreign trade zone. So it sits outside the U.S. economy. So it's a fixed location, such as a warehouse. And they're all over the United States. They, while most of them are near gateways, there are a lot of interior foreign trade zones throughout the country. But in a foreign trade zone, we have the benefit of keeping goods in there for an unlimited amount of time, so there's no clock that's ticking, and we can manipulate the product. In container freight stations and bonded warehouses, if it comes in as a widget, it has to go out as a widget. But in foreign trade zones, it can come in as a widget and go out as a computer. It can come in as a widget and go out as an automobile. It comes in as a widget and goes out as some consumer product. So the foreign trade zones become a great option now for reshoring, which obviously is a big topic today in global trade, which is bringing back manufacturing to the United States. So foreign trade zones gives an option for companies that are manufacturing and distribution to use the facility and get the tremendous advantages that you have, where when goods come into a foreign trade zone, there's no obligation to pay duty or taxes at that point in time. It's only when it exits the facility. The foreign trade zone also provides benefit for reduced customs clearance charges, reduced merchandise processing fees, and depending upon where the foreign trade zone is located, there's also some local, state, and county benefits that exist as well. So the idea here is that existing companies that have warehousing space, all three of these options can provide value to that warehouse, not only in differentiating itself, but also in providing additional revenue stream. One of the areas that the additional revenue stream comes in is not only the services of handling that status as a CFS bonded or FTZ, but there's also technology requirements in managing the freight coming through the facility, work in process, and exiting. And the third party provider, the warehouse manager, can provide that solution, that technology solution, as part of their service portfolio. So these things can produce tremendous value adds. I always use as an example a company that we worked recently with in Los Angeles with about 700,000 square feet. They took half their facility and made it a foreign trade zone. And a year and a half after they did that, they increased their revenue by about $600,000 to $650,000 a year against some $60,000 of expenses. So there was a significant return on investment when they took half their facility and turned it into an FTZ available for their clients to use. So with that, I think that's a pretty good overview of the three programs that really all warehouse managers and owners should consider in their portfolio.
Oh, that's excellent.
And I'd like to say something. Yeah. Tom's obviously a wealth of knowledge. When it comes to these topics, it's second nature for him to go through the details. As a supply chain operator, right, when you start hearing this, it gets a little overwhelming. Oh my God, there's so much compliance and regulatory that you have to have in order to operate this way. The difference in a 3PL offering just basic full pallet in, full pallet out warehousing to adding these value-added services with FTZ and bonded, as Tom mentioned, it brings a significant amount of increased revenue to you. You don't have to be the subject matter expert. I am absolutely not the subject matter expert when it comes to bonded FTZ compliance. But when partnering with companies like Blue Tiger and Tom, you have them on your team, right? So now you can go and start talking to your customers about these other value-added services. Every day, Uma and I are talking to clients around the world. This morning, we were on the phone with China and here domestically as well. And we offer these services to them because of the partnerships that we have with Tom. And you'd be surprised at how many customers 3PLs are doing business with today that are importing containers. And we never talk to them about bonded or FTZ. But when you do, one of our biggest customers here at MyBorg, we mentioned to him, hey, we're working on a bonded facility. And he was like, oh my goodness, we need that so bad. They're using a different 3PL for bonded and you for just the regular stuff. So I think there's definitely a lot of value to 3PLs to look at these options and then partner with people like Tom and Blue Tiger to help them get all the compliance controls in place.
So do you find that you're educating the client or is the client coming to you requesting these services?
A little bit of both. Clients that are looking for bonded warehouses, they already know all of the regulations or FTZ warehouses. They already know the regulations and what they're looking for. They're probably going online and typing in FTZ bonded facilities in whatever city we're operating in. But so they have the details. But it's the customers that are already in our buildings that we're doing container unloads for. And we say, hey, oh, by the way, have you thought about bonded? And they're like, what's that? So I've set up several introduction calls with Tom and his team with some of my customers saying, hey, you can use this service at MyBorg and this is how it benefits you. So we're educating them on the process as well.
So how is it set up at MyBorg? How is, you said you have two facilities of substantial size. How is MyBorg sectioned off? Explain to your fellow 3PLs who are looking at getting into this, maybe the infrastructure part of setting this value-added service up.
Yeah, absolutely. So today, our MyBorg facilities in Rockford, Illinois, and in Houston, Texas, like I said, it's around 2 million square feet. We have engaged Tom and Blue Tiger in the process of setting up our bonded facility. So we'll be doing a bonded facility in Houston and in Rockford for one of our big customers that when we told them, hey, we're going after bonded, he said it would be a value added to that. So Uma has taken lead collecting all of the requirements that Tom's team has provided to us. They send us all the questions. We get all the answers. We send it back to them and they put it up in a nice little bow and send it to customs and handle that for us. So they're a partner side by side with us. I would say one of the biggest challenges for us as a 3PL is trying to decide how much bonded space you need. As Tom mentioned earlier, you can't commingle international with domestic freight. So if you carve out 50, 60, 100,000 square feet of space and saying we're going into the bonded business, if that sits there empty because you don't have sales in the pipeline, That's a loss of revenue for the square footage. And I've spent a lot of time saying, hey, how much space do we need that we know we can pre-sell and get customers already committed to? And then once you get that footprint sold and filled, then you can expand your bonded footprint with custom. So I would say it's smarter to go less square footage, fill it up, and then expand versus going in super, super heavy without a client that you don't currently have.
Now, do you see your clients requesting, as Tom mentioned, the value, the added value added, again, bringing in that widget and having it leave? Do you see your client requesting you to maybe repackage, maybe do, again, some different labeling or re-kitting?
For repackaging or re-kitting or things like that, when it's bonded, we need to file a manipulation with customs. And that's a whole other process. We'll have to take it in. But only once we get an approval, we can touch that freight. Until then, we cannot touch it. Because everything that comes in bonded is technically owned by customs because they have not paid their duties yet. All we can do is hold it, get the approval, and of course, we can work on it. In one case, we had a bunch of trash cans come in, and it wasn't stamped. They needed the made in China stamped on it, and it didn't have that. So we had to put that on there, but even though it's something that we had to add to it, instead of changing something that's already in existence, we still needed an approval from customs. And once we got the approval, we could open it up and repackage it, and then we could move on with it. So that will be something we can definitely do, and it'll be part of our package. So that will be another value added thing as well that we can do definitely for sure.
Yeah, and as Tom mentioned, when it comes to the FTZ, you have the right to take a widget and turn it into a PC. And you have freedom to do that. The bonded, to Uma's point, you got to have manipulation reports. There's a lot different protocol on bonded versus the FTZ.
Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
The thing I was going to say is that one of the things to just have for the people who are listening to this is that if we go back 2 years ago, and say for the last almost up to about 7 or 8 months ago, warehousing a rate of capacity in the United States was less than 1% available. Every warehouse was chock-a-block full across the country because of the supply and demand issues that occurred during COVID. But I think most warehouse people today realize now that's fallen off dramatically. And every warehouse now operator has a lot more available space today than they've ever had before. The importance now in order to sustain continued operations successfully and keep your margins up and also attract new customers in a market now that's going to get very tight and competitive, the importance of creating these value-added services really becomes a very critical thing. And I think what they talked about a little bit, because I only focused on the primary purposes of bonded CFS and FTZ, is that a lot of companies really are looking and recognize that the expertise of supply chain and logistics, warehousing, and so forth is probably better transferred over to a third party. And therefore, they really do want to have companies that can do the fulfillment, the pick and the pack, and provide the systems to be able to process orders at a transactional level. And that all becomes a whole package portfolio that the warehouseman can provide to their customer.
Do you find, Tom and Nick and Uma, that the border agencies, because again, often the 3PL is sometimes difficult to classify in the supply chain system. Do you find that again, versus the 3PL versus a manufacturer's warehouse or a manufacturer's distribution center, is there a challenge with that as being a 3PL?
Yeah, I'll just speak to some past experience. I've had the opportunity to work in both bonded and free trade zone supply chains before through a 3PL. Really no challenges. Again, there, Tom Cook and Blue Tiger was our partner from a client compliance perspective with the FTZ and the bonded. And don't know how they treat a manufacturer, but they show up and you give them everything they need. You stay in with all the compliance. And there was no big concerns that I saw with operating either one of them as a 3PL.
I would say, Jennifer, that in straight distribution, where you're just warehousing product and maybe you're doing some pick and pack and fulfillment, those things have been done for now more than 50 years in most warehousing operations today. The challenges have already been identified and really dealt with, for the most part, pretty successfully. But when you get into what I call light assembly, kitting, and manufacturing, where a 3PL is doing it, yeah, there are complications there and challenges, because you now have things that you have to be done a certain way. You have quality control issues that you have to deal with, manufacturing specifications. So there has to be a much tighter control over, say, the engineering team of the principal company and what they're now outsourcing to a third party. But always appreciate that if you just take, for example, the pharmaceutical industry, they almost all their manufacturing is outsourced to contract manufacturers already, where they send that in and they've learned how to control those contract manufacturers to make sure the specifications they require, the quality control they require is there. So by doing it to a 3PL, there's really no difference at all. You just need to make sure that you have those controls in place. That would be really the biggest challenge. In a foreign trade zone where that manufacturing is done in a 3PL, the other challenge is that the Foreign Trade Zone Board in Washington, D.C. will get heavily involved in evaluating that manufacturing process. So when you do manufacturing in a foreign trade zone, the time frame of trying to get something done, say in that 60-day window to 90-day window, really jumps to as much as maybe 180 days, because you're going to have the scrutiny of the federal government involved in making sure that they understand the process and that the process conforms to the foreign trade zone guidelines that they have in place.
And I think with 3PL, that's also leniency. Everything Tom said is spot on. But with 3PL, we somewhat have a bit of a leniency, as in we can bring in a certain customer's team to work with us. So there's a certain part that needs to be changed, or there's a certain chip that needs to be swapped out. They can have their team over the facility and do that. But when it comes to a manufacturing facility or a free trade zone, they may not be able to go into the facility to get that swapped out. But with a 3PL, we can work with them, come up with an agreement. We can set up a space. Okay, this is your space. You can do it. And it's so much more easier that way than trying to get into a high security facility.
And so, one of the things too, Jennifer, is that when we look at these three options, we have lots of clients that actually have their warehouse segregated into four different areas. They'll have a domestic area just strictly designed for domestic freight. Then they'll have an area that's a container freight station, an area that's bonded, and an area that's an FTZ. So that can be done side by side. Basically, we're handing a blueprint to customs and we draw lines on it to say, this is how we're segregating that space. So there are companies that have taken on all the areas of benefit, and they really, those facilities become very busy because of that activity that happens, because they're providing a full range of services to their customers.
And how does the workers, does that play a role? Can I take one person and have it work in one area and jump to that next area?
We always make the point when we get at the operational level to cross-train all their staff so they can cover for people who might be out sick or absent or on vacation, or where there's a heavy amount of volume on one day versus another day. So you really want to cross-train all your people to move from one side to the other very quickly. You probably will have lead people who are specializing in each area, but the staff has to be able to maneuver from one area to the next. And you also can take your container yard, where you have your trucks coming in and out, possibly containers coming in and out. You can also name that area for any one of those categories as well. Because a lot of times you'll have freight that's stowed in a container for 2 or 3 or 4 days, right? So if you want to get that FTZ or CFS benefit, then the yard has to be named as well. So that's part of what we do in the assessment, is try to figure out what type of clients you have, what type of clients you're going to go for, what your needs are, and we define that to customs when we do it. And Nick mentioned earlier a good point, which is that if you start out at a smaller level, you can always amend the amount of space that you require. You can shrink it if you need to, and you can expand it. There's an amendment process that you go on with customs to get that done. And that happens very quickly when you need to shift space larger or smaller.
Yeah, Yeah, and then you have, like, of course, like the outside place, we call it the class four, and then the inside covered area, we call it class three. And Tom and his team, he actually submits a name, our name, and all our information out to customs. That way, whoever's working in these areas will have access to all these facilities. And it has to be only those people to just keep it safe. But if it's something like a company who wants to come in and have their team just work in the area for a bit, they will just have limited access to the area. But of course, we can bring it out, they can work on it, you know, still in a bonded area, we'll just have to make it safe. This is something that we can do as a 3PL, but if you're in a free trade zone, the security is tighter for anyone to go into the facility.
We talk a little bit about, and this may be some, I'm picturing that maybe a smaller 3PL or just someone in a growth. It sounds ominous a little bit. I'm setting up an area. What constitutes that area? Is it caged in? Is it just, I have to have a sign? Do I tape the floor? Does it have to be an actual room? Can you give a little bit of background on the infrastructure of, and when we talk about these areas?
One of the things that we deal with is that the regulations which come out of Washington are now handled by individual customs offices in different places. Their guideline is that they're supposed to have conformity in every one of their facilities across the country, that they interpret those regulations the same. And in actuality, that does not happen. You have individuals who are human beings that have different sensibilities, different ways of interpretation of regulations and so forth. So one of the things that we do is we speak to customs at a particular location. I appreciate the fact you'd be dealing with customs in Houston one day, customs in Los Angeles another day, customs in Minneapolis another day, customs in Boston and so forth. And so we, wherever we are that we're doing the work, we have a conversation with them to see the things that they want and how they interpret the regulations. So when it comes to the borders that exist within a warehouse when these locations are made, there are differences from port to port and actually from customs officer to customs officer. The general guideline is there has to be a clear delineation of the space that you have inside the warehouse. How you make that delineation depends upon how they want it to be. So in some cases, we have painted lines. Some cases, we have painted lines with signs that hang from the ceiling. In other cases, we have to have a fence. In some cases, the fence just goes up to maybe 6 feet. In other cases, it has to go from floor to ceiling, depending upon how the officer feels about it. And also where it's located and the nature of where it's located will have an impact as well. So we work with them. But I would say everybody has to think about the fact that there just has to be, generally from the starting point, a delineation somehow created that shows where the space begins and where the space ends. And customs is definitely going to want to see that. To what extent they want fencing or signs or painted lines and stuff like that, kind of is a variable that goes from port to port and also from location to location and each individual customs officer. So the key is to have a conversation with them at the front end to see where they want to go with these type of things. And obviously in some cities where we have a regular flow of this business, we already know what they're going to want either for a bonded or an FTZ location. And I would say as a general sense, the FTZ generally is the more restrictive one in terms of fences as compared to a more relaxed atmosphere when it gets to FTZs and container freight stations. But again, it depends on the particular officer and location.
Yeah, and I would say, Jennifer, too, going back to that small 3PO that's interested in bonded or free trade, there's a lot of traceability that's required by the 3PL. So having a solid warehouse management system in place that allows them to track entry numbers, products, customers, when things have been released out of customs or FTZ, like that's critical because they will show up at your facility and say, hey, here's the container number. Pull the file. Let's go through all the paperwork in the file. Now walk me to the floor and show me where these 20 pallets are. So having a WMS in place that tracks all of their compliance is very important. A sheet of paper and a pen will not work.
And sometimes they already know the answer. They're just going to question you, quiz you. and try to find out if whatever you have on your records matches what they have on their records. So they're just going to walk in, and the dates on each and every cargo is so crucial and so important to customs as well. So that's one thing that's very crucial, having the right WMS for your team.
And do you find that there's a difference, as Tom pointed out, regionally? Are the areas set up differently?
Our Houston facility, the customs here, the customs team here is very strict. You can go down, and it's funny because we can be in the same state. Like the customs in El Paso and the Valley, they're so lenient. But the customs here in Houston, they look at every single detail. The customs in Rockford, Illinois, they're a little more, I wouldn't say lenient, but they give in a little bit. They're not as strict as your fence is 8 foot tall and your cargo is probably an inch below the cage. Some customs officers will be like, no, it needs to be a foot below the cage. Some would be like, no, it's okay as long as it's below the cage. So it all depends on the customs officers as well. In every single state.
And it's just important if you're operating these facilities in different regions, knowing that just because you set it up one way in location A, they may ask you something completely different in location B, and you just got to be flexible and adaptable. And again, going back to what Tom and the Blue Tiger team do for us is they have those conversations with customs because they're speaking the same language versus smaller 3PO who doesn't understand all the terminologies. It gets, again, overwhelming very quickly. So partnering with somebody to have those conversations and say, hey, look, compliance actually says this. And they could say, I don't care. This is how I want it. But just being flexible to make sure that you're doing whatever that local inspector or officer would like.
One of the things that also to think about here, and this is really the value add, is that once the FTZ bonded or CFS is set up, what becomes attractive to a principal importer or exporter is that they don't have to worry about those issues about setting a facility up. It already exists. And they get immediately the benefits as the user of the facility, the benefits related to the duties and taxes and the customs clearance process. So they defer to the warehouse operator as being the expert, right? And even though they might have some support mechanisms internally and externally, they rely on that expertise and that immediate facilitation and capability to have that benefit. And we see more of this happening just as a general rule, is that companies that are importing and exporting recognize that their expertise is not necessarily supply chain, warehousing, or logistics. And that's where the 3PL and the warehouse operator comes into play, is that is their expertise. So let an expert handle it. And I would tell you that in all the comparisons we do, because sometimes companies hire us just to audit and to measure their systems for if there are better, less expensive options, is that while there's a cost to giving it to a third party, if you did that internally, the third party operator can generally do it more cost effectively than you can do it yourself in-house. And that's why a lot of companies are outsourcing a lot of these responsibilities, because it becomes letting experts handle it, and it really becomes a less costly option.
Yeah, and the final thing I'd say is that when dealing with them, it's a collaboration, right? In the beginning of my first experience with bonded facility, they show up and I'd run to a conference room and I'd call Tom, hey, they're here, what do we do? And he told us, like, they're here to help you. They're not the bad guys. They're not here to find all the things that you're doing wrong. So if you create a collaborative relationship with them, they'll educate you on the process. Because again, I think it's a partnership with the 3PL and with customs and whoever your consultant is. And his team shared a slide one time. It's like when customs shows up, it was like everybody jumping under the desk, scared. But by the time you work with somebody like Tom's crew and realize that it's that collaboration, you welcome them. So there were times where they'd start showing up at the end of my relationship with them, and we'd be doing an employee cookout and they'd come out and eat hamburgers with us. They're just there to do a job, but they're truly it's a collaborative relationship with all parties involved.
Congressional oversight actually has done a pretty good job, because I've been doing this for a long time. And when I first got involved in this business, the customs was almost dealing with a different animal that we had to negotiate and navigate. But today, they're much more looking at things, as Nick said, as a partner in the supply chain. And they recognize that they can add value to help a company create more business opportunity and lower their operating costs. So I would say that the majority of customs offices in most places are very cooperative. They're very helpful. They're not looking to try to screw anybody or hurt anybody. Obviously, there's the one or a few bad apples in the mix, but they're far and few between, really. The general sense of customs is very, very helpful to us to try and facilitate these programs.
Okay, so I'm a 3PL, and I say, okay, I want to do this. I want to provide these value-added services. How long? How long will it take me to achieve? Again, I've got a client who wants this, and I'm going to go ahead and designate my area. Can you give? And I know we could probably talk about it for the next couple hours, the process, but maybe a little overview process and then the timing that goes along with that.
Sure. So I'll answer this thing is that we tell customers to try to think about a 60 to 90 day window is the process is going to take for most cases. Okay. We've done them in 2 week time frames, 3 week time frames, but that's the exception. The average is about 60 days. Okay. We tell them to budget 60 to 90 days. There are three things that we are evidencing to the government when we process either any one of those three, a CFS, a bonded, or an FTZ. The three things is compliance, product accountability, and security. So we have to demonstrate to them in an application format, which they ultimately will come out to do a site visit to validate and verify everything you've represented in the application. We have to be able to say to them compliantly that we are operating a compliant operation relative to import and export regulations. Things like the harmonized tariff numbers, origins, documentation, record keeping, things like that have to be very well in order before you go into any one of those programs. Secondly, you have to have product accountability. And this is where technology comes in. You have to be able to track the product as it enters the facility, as it's in inventory, as it's in work in process, and as it exits the facility at the product code, SKU, or lot number level. Okay. And that can't be handled manually. It really has to be handled through a technology. So a very robust WMS or ERP system has to generally be in place. And most companies that we work with who have a basic WMS, all we do is just upgrade their WMS to add some additional fields and some additional integration capabilities. The security thing relates to the facility itself, making sure that there are levels of security. And it's really the terminology is unfettered access to the facility, meaning that somebody can't just drive up in a car and find themselves inside in the middle of the inventory without having been challenged somewhere along the line. Customs doesn't define what that security system should be. They just say the facility needs to be secure. So it could be fences, it could be cameras, it could be locked doors, or whatever systems that you have. We have one facility that's in a very bad neighborhood in Los Angeles, and customs required us to have a 10-foot fence around the facility with barbed wire and an armed security guard at the front end, right? Because of the nature of where we were and the nature of the products that were being held in the facility. So that's an unusual type of requirement, but it happens. We try to look to where they have cameras in their system, making sure that the doors are locked when they're not being used. If they have loading bays that are kept open during the warmer months, to have scissor doors put in so that you can still have airflow, but people can't come in and through the facility and so forth. So we work to get those things done. They become the capital investments that a company might have to make one of those projects happen. So when we do the financial model at the front end, we figure out what they might have to spend money on to get to where they need to be so they can see what the return on the investment is going to be when they do that. So the last point about security is that there's an HR function, which means that these companies have to create a background screening capability in their hiring practice, because the overriding rule is that you can't have somebody who has a felony conviction operating within the foreign trade zone, bonded warehouse, or container freight station, right? That doesn't mean that we don't have people who have felony convictions working in those things, because you can get exemptions for particular cases. An example would be, we were working with a company up in Buffalo, and their general manager had a felony conviction, but it was from a DWI 22 years earlier. And he's had 22 years of success. So we were able to get an exemption for him, because even though he had that felony conviction, it was from 22 years in the past. We work with their HR to make sure that they have a robust HR employee screening process. And as we all know, a lot of warehouses will hire temporary people during their peak seasons. So you need to make sure that if you use a personnel agency for those temps, that they're also doing the screening before they send people to you.
Thanks, Tom. Now, Nick and Uma, from setting it up to now working with a client, can you maybe give an example of a one that was just a successful partnership with your client in making this happen?
So I'll give you one from an FTC client that we onboarded. We had a customer that was a big importer of electronics looking for an FTC partnership for a few different reasons. Obviously, the accountability with delay in the duties and tariffs, they were really looking for that. But then they also did some exports into Canada. So it would come into the U.S., hit an FTC facility, and then their exports to Canada would leave FTC, go straight into Canada, and bypass the duties that they were required here. That customer was their outbound warehouse management system was an internal ERP that they built to where they had a lot of e-com platform stores already connected to it. So as their customers were ordering on their WMS, it was constantly downloading outbound orders to be picked and shipped. In order to make the FTC compliance, and Tom can correct me if I'm wrong, but at this point, the FTC officers in that area only wanted one warehouse inventory management system, keeping track of it, which was the internal system that we had. So we had the customer also wanted to keep track of it in their system, because that's how they created their inbound and outbound orders. So we did a integration between the two systems to where every day there were batch orders being sent. Their customer would download batch orders every 2 to 3 hours from their WMS, EDI into our WMS, allow our team to go pick, pack, stage the product back into their area for them to conduct the outbound shipments in their ERP. So our WMS was the single record of inventory that was being kept, which was in compliance for the free trade zone, but our customers still got to use their ERP for their inbound and outbound inventory. So having the ability to be flexible and integrate with your customers' WMSs or ERPs that they're using, it's critical. I don't consider myself a systems guru or understand all the EDI terminology, but there's partners that do. So just making sure that whenever your customer onboards, if they come in and say, hey, I need to do a integration with your WMS, like, oh, we don't do that. With 3PL, we never say, no, we don't do that. We figure out a way to make it happen if it's with partners, and then we go back to the customer and we say, this is what it's going to cost us to make that happen. So that was a great implementation of a brand new customer that really came in with some high expectations on system integration. It took us a few months to get it across the board, but everything got up and running. And as far as compliance FTC, we were in a good spot, and our customers still have visibility to all of their orders.
That's excellent. Excellent.
I just add to that, Jennifer, with that is that what he's making the point here is that example that he gave is that he accommodated a very specific client need, okay? And then it was a technology issue, which always gets a little, I would always say it's always a little difficult when you get to that level of where you have a client that already has an existing technology and they don't want to give it up, right? So that you create a solution where you can integrate both technologies and accomplish both things that you need, which is one, compliance with related to customs regulations, and two, the client's system for sending out orders and so forth. So being flexible and having that capability is a very critical aspect of warehousing. And we work with Myborg, and that's one of the things why they're successful, is that they can very easily accommodate these nuances when they pop up, rather than holding a rigid line to say, this is the way we're doing it, and you need to conform to this way. It's really accommodating what the client requires.
Yeah, and we have, it's not just the new customers, the old customers as well. We understand the regs, the regulations, customs regulations. And sometimes our customer would come in and say, I have this container coming in, but it's on hold. And you're like, okay, what do you want us to do? They were like, can you just put it in your warehouse for a bit? It was, you know, just hold it in your facility until customs comes over and examines it. We don't typically do things like that, but just to help a customer out, someone who we've done business with for a very long time, and my board is very loyal to their customers, and we'll bring them in, just set it there. It may be the simplest things, like to check for lead. You see this customs officer coming in looking like CSI agents with their brushes and everything. It's pretty interesting, but you know your customer and you've done business with them for so long, and you know this, that they probably follow the regs. They have everything in place. So it's also built on trust at the same time. And then as soon as customs comes in and checks everything, everything's good to go, and we can just let our customer know that, hey, this is good. Customs has released this. You're good to go now. And this is how we just typically just have to help each other in this industry. That's one of the most important things that people tend to say no to a lot of things when everyone in this industry is supposed to be working with each other. Just try helping each other out. Be compassionate, be kind. And that's all you need to do to get ahead sometimes.
Oh, that's excellent, Uma. And that is a great being an advocate for IWLA, because I think that's what the association tries to do. It, again, the fellow members helping each other out, that peer-to-peer knowledge. And I know you as my board will be a great, again, asset to IWLA to assist fellow members, which is just excellent. And I know Tom has done that through the past few years as well. So I know we can keep talking about this for probably a next couple more hours, but our time is wrapping up. And just any final thoughts, any, you know, again, recommendation, any last words on a 3PL looking to move into this direction, or should they or shouldn't they?
I think in the bigger picture, I think every warehouse operator and 3PL has to be looking at the economy, not only here in the United States, but the world, and recognize that this is not going to get better. In the short term, it's going to get worse. And most volumes are dropping in every aspect of the supply chain. Everywhere I go, I can see it happening. So I think it becomes more important for you to add value adds to your profile, make the changes that make you a more attractive service provider. And therefore, you then build the protectionism in so that when the business drops, you're still going to do much better than others who have that. And always appreciate that in these special classifications, only about 3% of service providers have these value adds. So it's a very small amount. So there's lots of room and opportunity there for your members to grow their businesses and maintain their positions by adding some of these capabilities. And we offer, as a service to your organization, a free 2-hour consultation. So they could just call us up and have a discussion about it with no obligations or anything to see whether or not it even makes sense. And I've had many of your members call over the years to have that conversation. In some cases, they're not ready for it yet, or it doesn't seem like it's something that would work. And in other cases, it has, and we've gone on to making it a project. I think that it's something that would really help companies get through the more difficult times, which we're already entering, and I think are going to get worse in the short term, at least for the next 18 months, is what we're predicting.
Yeah, and then from a 3PL's perspective, like Tom mentioned, putting all of your eggs in one basket, only doing one type of business is a little risky because that's up and down. The more you spread out and diversify your value-added services, whether it's kitting, free trade zone, bonded, whatever the case may be, it helps us leverage all different areas. And a lot of times, you're offering a service and you have those customers that are already in your facility that are looking for something else. We had an opportunity last week where somebody was asking us for overflow storage at one of our facilities. By the time we asked the question, hey, what other headaches are you having in supply chain? We finished that deal with handling their drayage, their warehousing, and their outbound shipments. And we even got OTR from My Board Freight running out of Texas. So just sell them and figure out what it is your customers need, not what it is that you want to offer. But yeah, we are super excited to be a part of IWLA. We believe, we started saying this a few weeks ago, and this the concept of friendly competition. Not one person knows it all, and there's ways that we can leverage each other. So friendly competition is a very healthy thing, and we're absolutely excited to continue our relationship with everybody out there, and we're always available for a phone call or an email as well.
Excellent. Thank you all. Appreciate it. This has been a great season opener. And again, I look forward to hearing some success stories from Myborg and some testimonials from Tom as we go forward. So thank you all, and look forward to our next episode of Warehousing Unboxed.